everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm super excited for this week's episode because it is our special annual rundown of our favorite horror movies of 2018. I know we're a few weeks late, but we are getting to it, so cut us some slack. Joined, as always, for this very special episode, you know her as the managing editor of DailyDead.com. You know her as a co-host of the Corpse Club podcast. You know her as the author of Monster Squad and the upcoming Monster Squad Volume 2. But most of all, you know her as my horror BFF. Welcome back to the show, Heather Wixon. Hi, Heather.
Hey, Patrick. You didn't even mention the whole top critic thing. Is this growth? I think we've experienced growth.
I'm incapable of growth. And so let's just say that it was an oversight on my part.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's okay. I'm okay with it.
You know her as a top critic. Please welcome back to the show, Heather Wixon.
Take two. By the way, my favorite thing is right now that even with my windows closed, my neighbor outside is yelling for his cat. So my neighbor Kenny is also joining us apparently.
Oh, fun. All right. Let's find out what his favorite horror movies of 2018 were.
Oh, boy. Yeah. It's probably involving cats because he has like seven of them. So
I can't remember any good cat horror last year.
I know. We are lacking, but maybe we'll get some with Pet Sematary this year.
Super overdue. Yeah. And Vinegar Syndrome is putting out Uninvited. So you are about to leave for Sundance. Are there any good horror titles showing at Sundance? I'm completely out of the loop.
Yeah, there's some really interesting stuff. It's kind of a weird year because there's nothing that's like jumps out at me completely. You know, I knew last year kind of going into it, some of the heavy hitters like Mandy, or Lords of Chaos and things like that. So it's a very interesting year for me because I'm not quite sure what is out there. I am excited for the Alien documentary.
Yeah.
I am excited for Extremely Wicked, and there's a whole bunch of other words that follow that. Which is the Ted Bundy movie with Zac Efron.
Right.
There is a movie, and I'm totally blanking on the name because it's the last 3 weeks have been a blur, but there's a movie with Emma Roberts and Mila Jovovich. So, I mean,
oh
come on.
Oh, my gosh. Did they make that like, specifically for you?
I think somebody was reading my diary. I'm pretty sure. I am excited for that. There is a Blumhouse joint that's going to be there called Relive, which was written or co-written, I believe, by one of my friends, Drew Daywalt, who now does a kick-ass job at kids' books. So that's pretty cool. He made the series about like the day the crayon died or disappeared. And he's made a really big name for himself in children's literature, which is kind of awesome because I've always known him as a horror writer. So it's kind of cool that he will be, he'll have a film at Sundance this year. So, yeah, it's weird because there's really no inkling of what, like, the secret screening is because now that Us is going to be at South By. So, I don't think they're going to sneak Us
right.
in
Right, yeah,
at
that would have been my guess, but, yeah.
That was everybody's guess. Part of me, and I know I've had it confirmed, it's not going to be Three from Hell, but part of me wishes it was Three from Hell only because I would be having the time of my life watching a lot of sort of upper crusty type journalists squirm in their seat for 90 minutes or so. And I'd be like, wee, like on a roller coaster. And they'd all sit there with their arms crossed. But I know it's not. I had that sort of slightly confirmed off the record.
Didn't 31 premiere at Sundance?
It did. And I mean, yeah, that movie. There's a good, I will still contend to this day, there is a good version of that movie out there. It's not the greatest movie ever, but there's a better version of that movie. And I saw it at Sundance. It seems like once they got out of the festival and realized like, oh, we have to go put this in theaters, they cut out a lot of character stuff, which was a bummer. So that kind of bummed me out a little bit. Like coming out of that, I was like, oh, this movie's really fun. And then I went and saw the big theatrical event for it. And I was like, holy crap. They totally butchered this movie, and everyone's like, how did you like this movie? And I'm like, but it was different. Yeah. So that was like the only review I've ever had to go back and put a disclaimer on because I was like, this is a completely different movie
right.
than
yeah,
I saw.
That's hard when you're reviewing a different movie, unfortunately. But
yeah, there was a lot of really, really good stuff with Meg Foster and Jeff Daniel Phillips in that movie that just completely got obliterated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One day we'll get that cut, I hope. But, you know, I don't know if it's going to change a lot of people's opinions, you know,
it's
but
still,
whatever.
It's still the only Rob Zombie movie that I don't like.
It's okay. I get it.
Yeah.
Believe me, when I took Brian to see it, he was angry afterwards. He was like, I don't know. You know, he was like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I swear this was different.
I haven't even showed it to Erica. She likes pretty much every Rob Zombie movie. And I was like, I'm not even going to show it because, like, I don't feel like there's anything there, you know?
Just have her watch something, one of his other movies again.
Right.
That's, you know. At this point, with that version, that's all she needs. Yeah. Just go watch something else. House of a Thousand Corpses works just fine.
Yeah, I think that one's her favorite.
So,
so we are going to count down our top 10 favorite horror movies. Do you have it? Before we get started, do you have any disclaimers? Because I have a major one.
Oh boy, no, not really.
Okay,
I'm pretty boring this year.
My only disclaimer is a couple of weeks ago we did our 10 favorite movies of the year, and there were three different movies on that list that I think could have also carried over to this one. Purely in the interest of trying to talk about more movies instead of giving up three spots to movies I've already talked about, I've only included one of those here. And you'll know it when you hear it. But there were two other movies, and I'm guessing they're going to show up on your list, so I think they're still going to get talked about. But because I wanted to talk about more movies, I left two of them off, even though they technically would be two of my favorite horror movies of the year and probably like way high up on the list. So that's my big disclaimer.
Okay. All right.
You should go first with your first pick. I guess your number 10 it would be.
Okay. So my number 10, this is my only cheat, because this is definitely what I wouldn't construe, or I wouldn't call this a horror movie, but there's enough going on in this movie that constitutes horror elements. So I went with The Night Comes for Us.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes, because, I mean, if you considering all the blood and guts, and I mean, yeah, I guess there's some guts in that movie, and just the brutality and the mayhem, I was like, you know, this qualifies. So it's my quote-unquote cheat pick of the year. But Timo Tejanto, like, I've been a big fan of his for a long time, and I love watching directors progress through their films. And there is a very natural progression, you know, in the films that he's done over the years. And I think this is, it's, I don't want to say it's his masterpiece because it's for as perfect and as much as I love it, I know that there's still even greater things waiting in the wings with him. And I'm excited to see what that ends up being. It's interesting because he had two different movies that came out this year, which the other one was May the Devil Take You, which I liked as well.
It may come up in a few minutes.
Oh, well, there you go. But it was like one of those things where I was like, I didn't want to turn it into the Timo hour, which, I mean, I would definitely do that. But I was like, you know, when it comes to those two, like the one that I've revisited the most is The Night Comes for Us. It's got great characters. I love that sort of final moment with that stare down. White boy Bobby is the best. What an unexpectedly great character.
Yeah, he's like a breakout this year.
So like it's so great because it's like he starts off in this place where you're like, oh, I don't really like this guy. Like I don't trust him. I don't know what's going on. And the way he just steps up is like so badass. And then the fight with the women is just so incredibly like badass in a movie like, you know, where you're like, oh, you know, this is. Some people would be like, oh, this is so like testosterone-y and stuff like that, which, you know, testosterone-y is like beefaroni, but for dudes, I guess. Just the way that he really puts the women in very, very much on the same platform as the men and really gives them a chance to shine in their own way. And that fight ends up being probably one of the most like intimately brutal fight sequences of that whole film. It's impeccably made. It's incredible. If you haven't watched it on Netflix yet, do yourself a favor, you know, make time for, it's like 2 hours. You will thank me. You know, everyone wants to compare it to The Raid and I get it because there's so many carryovers here, but I think what Timo does with this movie is enough to establish it as its own thing, without those Raid comparisons.
It's definitely of the two movies, and like I said, the other one's going to come up probably in just a few minutes here, but it's the one of the two that I know I'll go back to more often. And the only reason I didn't include it is, like you said, it's more of an action movie. And as somebody who loves action movies and horror movies, one of my favorite trends of recent years between The Raid and a couple other movies is sort of action movies with horror movie violence. because it combines these two things that I love, and I can't think of a better combination than The Night Comes for Us. Like, the violence is insane, the action is insane. And it's wild to me that, you know, I saw Headshot a couple years ago, and I liked Headshot, and I remember thinking at the time, like, wow, for a filmmaker who hasn't done a lot of this kind of action before, he really does action well. And then along comes The Night Comes for Us, which is like, he outdoes himself by 100%, and it's just, for me, this was the action movie of the year. And Mission Impossible, whatever, Fallout, was like, cool, it was fun, but give me The Night Comes for Us any day of the week. It was so goddamn entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I think The Villainous is another movie that gets pretty close this year. But boy, yeah, the way that he's... I'm glad you mentioned Headshot, because I really liked that movie at a Fantastic Fest. But I felt like about the last 20 minutes kind of pulled me a little bit out of it. And it didn't feel quite as succinct in its vision. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that he really hones in here, again, it just really shows a great growth as a director. Yeah. So yeah, anything Timo wants to do in the future, put me right in the, you know, front row. I'm there. You know, I'm completely on board.
I'm in for it. It's funny because my number 10, I originally put as Victor Crowley, and then I paused for a second because I think it sort of officially came out this year. I don't know. But so I paused for a second and I thought, I might have put this on my list last year. And so I went back and just listened to the beginning of our show. And sure enough, it was my number 10 last year. So I took it off the list.
It's so great. It made your list.
It was just, and in both cases, it's like, yeah, it's number 10. Anyway, so I replaced it with The Strangers Pray at Night. I still have not seen the original Strangers. I know you hate me because of this, because I know it's one of your favorites. I am almost deliberately avoiding it at this point because of the emotional toll that I know it will take on me, and I'm in a very fragile state, so I don't know if I'm ready for it. But Strangers Pray at Night took no emotional toll on me because it's much poppier, and it's just about kind of being colorful and this fun sort of 80s throwback, and of course plays home to the best horror sequence of the year with the whole swimming pool scene about halfway through. The movie itself is not really an all-timer, but it's a movie that I could easily leave on anytime I come across it on cable, you know, in the same way that I leave on a lot of like 80s slashers. This has that same kind of energy. And I know a lot of people didn't like it, and especially didn't like the characters. I was less bothered by the characters, I guess, but I thought the movie was really slick and really well done and just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it makes my list a little higher.
Okay.
But it is on my list, of course, because I am nothing if not basic when it comes to my love of slashers. But I mean, it's a movie I've actually watched a few times this year because I got the Blu-ray at the beginning of the year. Or gosh, it was like May, I think, is when the Blu-ray came out. And I've probably watched it at least four or five times so far in 2018. Yeah, it's got a really fun rewatch value. Like, as you said, it's something you can kind of just put on and enjoy the same way a movie you've seen 100 times. Because
right.
I work to a lot of movies. But the score is great, you know, or the soundtrack is great. Score's great, too. I love, again, when you talk about directors who have a natural progression in their filmography, Johannes Roberts is one of those directors because, and I still remember this and I still feel bad, but I hated Storage 24.
I was not a fan of that movie.
And, you know, it was a bummer. There's some good stuff with the creatures and stuff, and it really kind of, you know, it aims really high. But with the budget it had, it falls really flat. And then The Other Side of the Door, I liked more, but I still felt it was still pretty rough. And then, you know, seeing 47 Meters Down, I was like, okay, this guy is starting to find his groove. And then Strangers Pray at Night, which is basically his love letter to John Carpenter. I was like, oh, this dude is having a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
You could just see it. Like, you can tell this guy really loves, you know, horror stories. Like, he... You know, very much you can feel his own fandom coming through, particularly in this film. And I think there's some really fun stuff. And I don't really mind the characters. You know, I like Lewis Pullman in this. Like, he ends up being sort of the biggest surprise for me. Because how many times do you watch a movie where you're like, oh, he's like the goody two-shoes brother and she's the bad girl and the parents are frustrated? Like, I kind of like them in this. Like, I like – there's the scene with the dad when, you know, when – the, you know, the bad guy character is sitting in there and the dad is just fighting for his life, and you know it's done, and there's like this sadness to it.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a lot of slasher movies where there's not really a sadness when it comes to a character's death. So for people who bag on the characters, like, I don't quite get it, because I feel like they're actually better than I was expecting, to be very honest. And for me, like, living up to this, you know, the original Strangers is, you know, a high bar, because I love that movie. I really do. But definitely not one if you're not looking for so much of a downer.
Exactly.
It's got its own sort of sense of brutality, to it. But like, you know, if you want to go and watch somebody, you know, have a tussle to Total Eclipse of the Heart, like this is it. I remember like seeing the first time I watched it, like in that pool scene, I wanted to stand up and clap.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, this is it. This is my movie. But I do remember my favorite part of that screening, is we were sitting next, and it was like some YouTube influencers were there and stuff like that. Yeah. But it was so cute because this gal, like, she's probably watched like 3 horror movies ever, but she's sitting there and there's a scene when the cop shows up. And she audibly says in the room, she's like, "Oh, thank God." And I was like, "Oh, sweetie, do you not understand what's about to happen?" Right. Like, oh boy.
Right.
Just because the cops show up doesn't mean you're in a good place. I was like, I wanted to give her a hug, and I was like, oh, this isn't over by a long shot. So that was like my favorite thing about that screening. But yeah, I love The Strangers Pray at Night. So, but yeah, it made higher. It's up higher on my list.
Okay. It's a really fun movie, and one that took a lot of shit, I feel like.
Yeah, here's the thing. I'm going to get up on my old lady soapbox.
Ooh, here it comes.
Yes, here it comes. So the thing is like, we watch movies and we have these sort of knee-jerk reactions, right? Like, that's, everybody has to get out and they have to like say first how they felt about a movie. And it's fine, but like, for when I'm doing stuff, like, I almost want to wait a day or two before I even start to write a review, because I don't know really, like, I could really love a movie the minute I finish it. But like, if I sit with it for 24 hours, like, maybe that's when I start to really put in that constructive criticism. Like, oh, well, maybe this isn't, you know, you don't have that adrenaline rush. And we're going to see, you know, and this is going to happen. It happens a lot. Like, I will tell you, and this is, you know me, like, I have been screaming from the rooftops since 2011 about Scream 4. Like, literally anybody who will listen to me, I have been just yammering on about this movie for years. And for years I've been hearing, oh, it's a terrible sequel. Oh, blah, 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 this and that. Well, here we are. We're about 8 years removed, and suddenly everyone's starting to catch on to Scream 4. And I'm like, okay, thank you. Because I think there's perspective. You know, everyone's like, oh, this is the worst movie ever. Is it really, though? You know, is it really the worst movie ever? And I don't mean Scream 4, I just mean in general. Because, you know, how are you going to feel about this movie in 5 years? And I try to keep that in mind when I'm reviewing stuff. Like, I'm not going to be kind, well, I'm never mean to a movie, but I'm not going to, you know, soften my views on a movie. If I really don't like something, you know, I'll explain why. But I'll try to find the value in it, too. Because, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, you know. But at the same time, like, everybody who's pissing all over Strangers Pray at Night, or even the people who've been outwardly against Halloween 2018, like, I'm like, is it really worse than Halloween Resurrection? Really? Because, like, come on. Let's be serious about this. Like, even if you don't love Halloween 2018, and not everybody has to, but you're going to tell me that Halloween Resurrection is a better movie?
Right.
Like, even on a technical level, that doesn't hold up. So it's one of those things where, you know, everybody wants to, you know, be cool and piss on movies, and that's fine. But I guarantee in 5 to 10 years, we're going to be seeing all these think pieces about how everybody got, you know, right. Everybody got The Strangers Pray at Night wrong.
Right.
And
right.
I will be the one who've been saying, you know, since the beginning, I told you so. So I told you so.
Well, and I appreciate, again, and I say this as somebody who has not seen the first film, but who has a sense of what that movie is. I appreciate that rather than just repeat that experience that.
Oh, absolutely.
They're totally different movies, and you could watch one depending on which mood you are in, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm totally in agreement with you. And I didn't need a repeat of the first movie.
No.
Like, if I need that gut punch emotional sort of roller coaster, like, I'll just go watch The Strangers.
Right.
If I want to just kick back and, you know, let a little giant Jim Steinman flow through and have some fun, I'm going to put on Prey at Night. And that's totally fine.
Yeah. All right. What is your next pick, number 9?
Okay. So my next pick, it's probably one of the most surprising movies I saw this year. I wasn't, you know, and this again isn't anything against the filmmaker because I really liked his previous work, but I wasn't expecting a ton from it. So it just completely blew me away and surprised me in every possible, you know, way, you know, out there. Is What Keeps You Alive from Colin Minahan.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if you've seen it.
I have.
Okay. I really liked it. I really liked the women in that movie. Hannah Anderson and Brittany Allen are very, very good together in this movie. And I honestly feel like Brittany Allen has become sort of this, I want to say, like, she's sort of like this hidden weapon and stuff, where she shows up and she is just really, really good. In fact, she actually has a small role in The Prodigy, which comes out in February. And I was like, oh, shit, there's my girl, Brittany. And she's so good. And I really liked It Stains His Hands Red in terms of zombie movies.
Yeah,
yeah, it does something completely different. It's very much, you know, a character piece because it's her and a zombie in a desert. And honestly, like, going into this, I was like, okay, you know, we've got a thriller in the woods. And it really, as somebody who sort of loves, like, the 90s sleazy thrillers that kind of do little twisty turnies on you and all that kind of stuff. Like, it very much surprised me because I was just kind of like, oh, okay, we'll see how it goes. And I was like, oh shit, I'm really loving this movie. And there's definitely like this one part where the movie turns and I was like, oh yeah. Okay. You know, and it ended up really exceeding any sort of expectations, and it really hinges on those two women who are fantastic. And I want big careers for both of them, but I think Brittany Allen has really become sort of this quietly unsung character actress in just a very, very short time.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool because I think she was in the Jigsaw movie too, very, very briefly. I think she was one of the first to get killed. Sorry, spoiler for Jigsaw, because anybody cares. But yeah, I really enjoyed that movie a lot. And I think it dove into some issues that, you know, I think a lot of folks, you know, deal with in terms of like abuse and, you know, the things that we do, you know, for the people that we love and the thing, you know, sort of that selflessness that you're supposed to have in relationships and what's that line. But it's great. It really is. I was very surprised. IFC really did some excellent films this year. And honestly, I struggle between this and Piwacket for this slot. But ultimately, I went with What Keeps You Alive.
Yeah.
So there, I slightly cheated by mentioning Piwacket.
Either of those would have been a fine choice. Yeah, it's not on my list. I have a movie higher up on my list that, to me, kind of scratches the same itch. But it's definitely, I think, I mean, I liked It Stains the Sands Red, but this is probably, I think, Colin Minahan's best movie and probably the one I've liked the most. And I appreciate the fact that as I was watching it, I didn't necessarily know. I knew nothing about it going in. I knew the title. That was it. And it is a movie that kind of took me by surprise and went in some directions I wasn't expecting. And it's nice to watch a movie and not know exactly how things are going to play out. I mean, it's a variation on kind of survival horror, but I think does enough different that I didn't feel like, oh my gosh, I've seen this movie so many times. And it's really well made. You know, he has frustrated me in the past. I think of like Extraterrestrial, which is a well-made piece of shit. You know, like it is. I don't like that movie, but it's well directed. And so it's nice to see the material catching up with him more and more. And yeah, it's a strong movie. And like you said, two really good performances at the center.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next for you?
My 9, as promised, is May the Devil Take You, the other Timo movie from this year. I was so jealous of everyone who was at Fantastic Fest because I knew that Timo had not one but two movies premiering there, and both were getting...
We were assholes. We were just living in gluttonous movie heaven.
People were... Both movies were getting such good buzz. I mean, especially The Night Comes for Us. That was the one that was really blowing the doors off. But so I was really looking forward to both of these, and it was nice that, you know, they showed up on Netflix. And Netflix has kind of turned around this year in terms of stuff showing up on Netflix is not a death sentence anymore. You know, we started the year with the Cloverfield paradox, and it was like, oh, I get it. And then I know why this went straight to Netflix and didn't get, you know, bigger distribution. But then by the end of the year, we're getting two Timo movies on Netflix, and they're both pretty incredible. May the Devil Take You is very much his sort of Evil Dead 2 in terms of the energy. It doesn't have as much. It has more, I don't want to say dead spots, I'll say quiet spots than The Night Comes for Us. But when it kicks into high gear, it really fucking kicks into high gear. And it's just a movie where I like these horror movies where I feel like I can hear the filmmaker laughing off camera at what he or she is getting away with. And that felt like this movie to me. There were a handful of movies that, and they may come up later on your list or higher on your list, so I don't want to mention them right now. At the end, if you remember, I can bring them up, but there's a couple other movies that were sort of in this camp for me this year, but this was my favorite of all of them because this was the most like what I want out of this kind of horror movie. Again, I don't want to mention the other ones because I don't want to step on your toes if they come up later, but they're movies that are getting a lot of attention and showing up on a lot of lists. But for me, this one went the furthest and got the craziest and was the most fun and was the most like what I want from a horror movie. So I really had a good time with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like when you talk about, you know, you mentioned like you can feel the energy like sort of radiating off the director. And I mean, it's, you know, once you kind of get into the latter half of that movie, like he must have been like a kid in a candy store. Like just it's, you know, it's him getting to sort of be his own Sam Raimi in a way.
Right.
And just, you know, pulling zero punches with a lot of that stuff. It's so good. And it is a shame. And maybe, you know, I feel like a jerk that I didn't mention it because it, you know, it kind of got overshadowed by The Night Comes for Us. You know, because that was like the, you know, right. I think they debuted on Netflix, I think the same day.
Certainly around the same time. Yeah, I don't know exactly, but.
And, you know, so if anybody who's, you know, seen The Night Comes for Us but hasn't made time for this, like, you should make some time, especially definitely. If you're a horror fan. I think it's definitely one of those movies that will surprise you because, I really didn't know what to expect going into it. I was like, okay, you know, because I'd just seen Satan's Slaves, I'd seen Tumbad, so I was like, okay, is it going to be like that? And then when it wasn't, I was like, and that's not to say I didn't like Satan's Slaves, because I really, really enjoyed that movie a lot, and I really enjoyed Tumbad, but this is a completely different beast. But yeah, if you haven't given this one time, please do. It's really, you'll thank us. Especially if you're an Evil Dead fan, it's just, it's kind of like, I almost feel like it's almost like his Drag Me to Hell in a way too.
Oh yeah. 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 So Satan's Slaves was one of the movies that I was referring to and I liked it, but I would put this on over that any day.
Yeah.
And the other one, I don't know if it's on your list. Terrified.
You know what? I still haven't watched Terrified. Okay.
Both movies are really good, but they're both sort of, I think all three are sort of, could be lumped together under the same sort of categorization in terms of the supernatural element and sort of this idea of a family curse. I mean, there's a lot of similarities across the three movies, but for me, May the Devil Take You has like the most humor in it. It goes the furthest. It's just the wildest of all of them. And, I appreciate that. The other two are like maybe classier, and I don't mean that as a pejorative, but in a little bit of a way I do mean that as a pejorative, because I like the way Timo leans into the insanity of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think Satan's Slaves, once it gets to where it's going in sort of the last 20 minutes, that's when that movie becomes slightly like May the Devil Take You, but so much of the movie sort of plays it very straight for the rest of the film, where it's hard to even know that that's coming.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it both are, you know, that it's a really well-made film. And it's really hard for me to get into sort of supernatural movies sometimes. Cause they're not, I mean, I technically almost every horror movie is sort of supernatural, but I mean like ghosty demon type stuff.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's not something that sort of scratches any cinematic itches for me, cause we've had so many. But yeah, I think out of any, you know, at least between Satan's Slaves and, you know, May the Devil Take You, I would definitely choose May the Devil Take You. But that's, again, not to put down Satan's Slaves. It's a really great movie. And I believe that, is that on Shudder too?
It is, yeah.
Okay, cool. Shudder doing the Dark Lord's work, man.
They are. They had a lot of good stuff this year. All right, next up for you, your number eight.
It's interesting because at the beginning of the year, I would have expected this to be a little higher. But as the years progressed, and for me, a lot of it comes down to rewatchability. And this is a movie I've seen three times, and I'm kind of like, okay, I don't know that I would probably, you know, I mean, I'll watch it, but I don't need to watch it again. But I will. I mean, I'm sure I will. But I went with a Quiet Place.
Yeah, it's a little higher up my list.
Okay. Yeah, it's an incredible feat. Technically, you know, on a technical level, I mean, obviously it does something very special and very unusual with, you know, the choices that it makes. You know, John Krasinski is amazing in it. So is Emily Blunt. Those kids are fantastic. I even like the creature design. You know, everyone's like, oh, it kind of looks like a Cloverfield creature. I was like, please, for the love of God, let's not lump this into the Cloverfield universe. We don't need that. But for me, it's, again, because it's sort of, it does what it needs to do, and then it gets out. And I know we're getting a sequel, but I don't, I mean, I'm going to go see it because that's part of the gig, but I don't need it. Like, that story for me is told.
Yeah, I don't, I don't need a sequel.
Yeah, and I feel very satisfied with the way that that story, you know, from beginning to end, you know, basically wrapped up. And I think it's a very lovely, you know, depiction of this family, you know, dealing with these very unusual circumstances, you know, that even though the world is different and everything is, you know, weird and very, you know, heightened, yet they're all still dealing with very real problems. You know, and I don't, but for me, it's like, why are you having a baby? That just for me is like the biggest problem. Like,
I hear that complaint so much, and I
mean, I get it that it's hope and it represents the future.
Yeah, right.
But
if you're not having a baby, what are we doing? Like, then what's the point of any of it?
Babies are noisy.
No, I understand, but I'm saying, like, by saying, okay, we better not have a baby, you're essentially just saying, like, it ends here. This is.
But you have two kids. I mean, who's to say that the monsters might not go away in 5 years?
I don't know. You know what I mean? I just think I don't have a problem with the having
no,
of the
I
baby.
I get it. I mean, I get what it represents. But at the same time, it's like, it's not to say that these monsters are going to live around in this environment forever. So why not wait a few years and see how it's going to go?
Well, we don't know that it was on purpose, and maybe they, you know, aren't skilled in the art of terminating a pregnancy at home. I don't know. You know, we have no idea, which I actually kind of appreciate that there isn't a ton of, like, backstory.
Yeah, but they were at the pharmacy. They could pick up condoms, for Christ's sakes. I'm just kidding. I'm being nitpicky. But no, I really love the movie. And I think that bathtub scene with Emily Blunt is insanely great. Like, that's... I mean, that alone makes that movie worth watching.
The number of times that he shows the nail on the stairs is so great. Like, the way that's set up and then pays off. It was a thing of beauty. See, I have not rewatched it because I felt like, and this gives me hope that you say there is rewatchability, because I'm with you. A lot of the movies on my list are the movies, they may not be the best movies of the year, but they're the ones that I feel like I'm going to come back to the most. But this is one that I was like, there might not be a lot of rewatchability. Like, this might be a one and done because it's such a sort of technical exercise, in like generating suspense and using sound design and all that stuff, that I felt like I got most of what I could get from it on one viewing. But the fact that you're saying, no, it actually holds up on repeat viewings, this gives me hope. This is like having a baby in the monster world. Yeah, so that's higher up on my list. My number eight is a movie I saw at Cinepocalypse last year, but didn't actually get distribution until this year, and it's a movie that, again, premiered on Shudder and is available there now. And that is a first-time feature from writer-director Graham Skipper, and it's a movie called Sequence Break.
Oh, I'm so terrible. I still haven't watched it yet. And I want to, and I feel like a jerk, but I'm glad you're mentioning it.
Yeah, it's a movie that, I mean, you know of my love for Beyond the Gates, as do most of the people who regularly listen to this show. And
what?
It reminds me a lot of Beyond the Gates, not only because of Graham Skipper's involvement or Chase Williamson's involvement, but because it's using this one story about a guy who's getting way too close with an arcade game, in sort of a Cronenbergian body horror way, as a way of exploring this much more personal idea about responsibility and growing up and, you know, trying to avoid growing up. And it's small, and I think a lot of people will see it as slight. It's probably more science fiction than horror. The horror really comes out of, like I said, the kind of body horror stuff. But I thought it was really, really well done and really interesting and really kind of trippy at times. And I just like, you know, that people are using the genre to tell these very sincere personal stories. So I was really impressed with it. I'm a big fan.
Awesome. Yeah, I got to interview Graham for it before getting to see it, because I think I was at Comic-Con doing an interview for it when it was getting ready to premiere, because I think it also played, like, I want to say.
I'm sure it did, yeah.
That might have been, like, its first screening. Yeah, and I remember, like, and it's always so hard to, like, do interviews when you haven't gotten a chance to see it yet. But I'm glad you mentioned it, because I really like, I love Beyond the Gates as well. And I really like Graham Skipper. You know, as sort of this, you know, the, watching him come up in sort of the realm of indie horror is exciting. This is where I have to admit something terrible, but I didn't actually get Shudder until like midway last year.
You have a lot of catching up to do.
Dear God, do I ever.
The good
and
news
it sucks
about.
Because it's like.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, it's like. This is what everybody tunes in for, is just us stumbling over each other. But no, it's one of those things where it's like, I turn, you know, I'll put on the app and I'm like, oh my God, there's so much. And I get really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, maybe I just go watch Scream 4 again, because I'm a basic bitch. But no, Shudder is, I mean, just, it's a gift. There's so much stuff on that just with them, that it makes it really hard to like go in and like find those new things when there's so many of those other movies where I'm like, oh, I'll just put on Silver Bullet while I work, or I'll do this, you know? So it's, I'm just a jerk who doesn't get to make a lot of time for movies I haven't seen right when I'm at home. But now I know I have to see Terrified and Sequence Break. So I have some homework in the next few weeks.
Well, and it's such a testament to Shudder's programming, because I remember when it was first announced, and I think we even talked about it on a podcast, maybe Doug and I don't know. It was like, oh, AMC is launching this horror streaming network. And my feeling at the time was, well, why would I need that? Like, I own all the horror movies I want to watch. You know, like I've seen enough horror movies. I own enough horror movies. I can't imagine that it's anything but redundant. And boy, was I wrong, because Shudder for me is essential. And, it's for movies like this, you know, that wouldn't have gotten a chance. I'm so glad I got to see it theatrically. That's the one nice thing about festivals sometimes, and you know way better than I do, is that, you know, some of these movies play at one or two festivals and then disappear, and maybe they show up on Netflix or VOD one day, but it's nice to have gotten to see it on a big screen. And you know, it's a movie where the romantic leads are Chase Williamson and Fabienne Therese, which, like, yeah, sign me up for any movie where they play romantic leads.
You know how I feel about Fabi.
I do.
Like, we've had that conversation. So.
I do, and she's great. So, yeah, and it's like 80 minutes long. So you could knock
Even
it
better.
Out very quickly, yeah.
All right, I love it.
Next so up, your number 7.
All right. So this was a movie you were like, you should probably watch this. And I was like, okay. And I missed it because I was, when they were doing the press junket and press screenings for it, I was a jerk, and I was at Fantastic Fest. So once it hit theaters in October, I completely missed it because the month of October just sucks, for me. It's fun, but boy, is it exhausting. And, so I didn't get a chance to see it until very recently, which is, Hellfest.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about that movie the other day, and I was like, yeah, that seems like that would be your jam.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I could not care less about any of those characters, but holy shit, do I want to live in this world. Because, you know, we're very spoiled in LA. So we have, you know, Halloween Horror Nights. We've got Not Scary Farm. Disney, you know, Land does their own little thing for, you know, sort of the safe Halloween type stuff where, you know, you can go trick-or-treating in the park. So very much sort of like haunted attractions, you know, are very much a way of life for us here in LA. We also get the Haunted Hayride as well. And so for me, that movie lives and dies by its atmosphere. Once they get to the park, is really when the movie becomes fun for me. As I mentioned, I didn't really care a lot about these characters. No. And it pains me to even say that because I love Bex Taylor Kloss from the Scream series. And she, I did not.
She is really awful in this movie. Not her performance. The character she plays is awful.
The character is really bad. And they're very disposable characters. And we even want, they even want us to try to care about Natalie, the main girl. And I kind of just don't.
Nope.
But that world that they've created and the way that they light that movie and the way that they shot it and the way that they leaned into everything that you love about haunted attractions and sort of spill it onto the big screen. Like it's incredible. It really is a lot of fun. And it's also interesting because like, I know, like I'd heard like Tony Todd was there for 4 days shooting. And I was like, for that, cause I was kind of expecting a little bit more, because I liked the Barker and I thought he was a really interesting character. So I hope if they do get to make a sequel, you know, maybe there's a little bit more to him next time. Maybe we get a little bit more of the Barker. Because, boy, like, you know, if you're going to put Tony Todd in your horror movie, please, for the love of God, give him more than one scene. Like, I know we get his voice throughout the park, but that's, you know, I want more Tony Todd. I liked sort of the not knowing what the killer. I liked how it sort of ended up resolving itself without really resolving itself.
Right.
You know, there's just a lot of really, really great set pieces in that movie. Like it's, if you can just tune out the characters, you're going to have a good time. It sounds like, well, you know, horror has to have great characters. And I get that. Like there are movies where that is the function. I don't think this movie was that.
No.
And that was okay with me. Because I was in it for the ride of Hellfest. And this idea of a guy who's stalking people in haunted attractions, like it's kind of scary because he's a guy, you know, and we sort of find out that, you know, he doesn't wear just one mask. You know, he wears multiple masks, which means he could be anybody. And I think that's kind of interesting and definitely something we hadn't really seen before. And I, you know, again, it's a movie like, do I wish the characters were better? Of course. But it didn't derail the fun of it. And it really just feels like, you know, Gregory Plotkin just throws you in sort of a ride for 90 minutes and just has some fun with it. But I just, yeah, it was a good time. I was really surprised.
Yeah, like Strangers Prey at Night, it's very much kind of a slasher throwback. It's a little thin, especially with the characterization, like you said, but that's really not what we're there for. And it's a movie, I caught it at home as well, and I wish I had been able to make it out to see it theatrically because I think a lot of the set pieces and the design and just the way the camera moves through the you know, haunts, I think would have been really cool on a big screen. It's a well-made movie and has some pretty memorable kills, especially the first few. As it goes on, it lost me a little bit. I don't think it sustained itself as well as I wanted it to, but it's definitely very enjoyable.
Yeah, two of the kills were just really toss-away.
They
kills.
Just kind of give like, up. Okay. Yeah, it's so crazy, especially yeah. because the first few are like pretty spectacular, and then it's like, yeah, all right, let's just move on.
Yeah, but I will say, like, sort of that final, you know, sequence in the haunted house is pretty great, especially, again, with all the usage of masks and stuff.
Yeah.
And it was also interesting to me, too, because we were watching it, because, again, Brian and I do these things where there's, like, a whole thing about, like, the room triggers, because there's, like, a little line you cross, and that's what's supposed to, like, trigger the animatronics in different rooms.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, do people use that? Like, is that a real thing? Have I been unknowingly been triggering, like, all these different rooms and not even realizing it. So I think anybody who really enjoys the experience of haunted houses, which I know you don't, but as somebody who does, it's a really fun way to sort of put yourself in that world, you know, kind of from the comfort of your own couch.
Well, that was another reason I liked Hellfest was I was like, oh, I can go to one of these and not actually have to go to one of these.
Exactly. You don't have to stand in line. You don't have to people touch you.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because, you know, they made the whole big thing about like the people touching you. And that's usually like a big no-no at most of these. But it really reminded me when a few years ago, Rob Zombie did The Great American Nightmare here in Los Angeles. And I think they did it in Chicago for a year. And they had a thing where when you went through the House of Thousand Corpses maze, they were like, you know, do you want to be touched or no? And if you wanted to be touched, they did a blood cross on your forehead.
Oh, wow.
And they marked you. Yeah. And then that's when the performers knew that they could touch
right,
you.
Right.
So that was, it's for me, it was like, oh, and it's kind of like the Rob Zombie thing. And, you know, and it's like, and that also, cause like, at the Rob Zombie thing, they also did a thing where, for the Lords of Salem's maze, they put hoods on us and then they separated us. So you're going through this maze with no line of sight and all you're hearing is the sound and you're not with anybody. And I was like, oh my God, this is the most terrifying thing ever. And you're having to touch things and you don't know if you're touching people or walls or whatever. So there's a lot of really cool stuff that this movie leaned into that I appreciated as a fan. And it also, I'm like, all right, guys, like next year, these, you know, like Horror Nights, you better step your shit up because now I really want to get the crap scared out of me.
My number 7 is the closest I have to a cheat on this list because it is very questionably, it's not really horror. It's much more science fiction. But that is the first film from writer-director Natasha Kermani, and that is Imitation Girl, starring Lauren Ashley Carter. Again, I think there's some body horror elements the further into the movie that we go.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
there's certainly kind of an atmosphere of dread throughout the movie. And like I said, I recognize that it's not scary. It's not really horror, but I just thought it was really, really well done and really interesting and an exciting sort of announcement of a voice. You know, there's a handful of movies on this list that are first time filmmakers. And that is pretty exciting. You know, when somebody comes out sort of, maybe not fully formed, but certainly well on their way to the point where you just can't wait to see the next thing that they do and how much they grow and even improve as a filmmaker. But, you know, a lot of indie horror fans, such as myself, are big fans of Lauren Ashley Carter. Here's a movie that is smart enough to give us two Lauren Ashley Carters. She's really, really good, I think, in both roles. And I just found it really interesting and smart and different, and it excited me, and that's why it's on my list.
Yeah, no, I really like that movie. I saw it out of, I want to say, Dances with Films festival out here in LA 2017, if I remember correctly. It was
probably
like the summer, so yeah, I think, yeah, and
it came out, I think, early this year.
Yeah, and it was one of those where I was like, oh, you know, I'll cover it because I love Lauren Ashley Carter. And I was like, okay, cool, let's do this. And again, it was very much a surprise for me because I think it really taps into sort of this duality of femininity and sort of society's expectations for women. And it really explores them in a very thoughtful way that we haven't really seen before. And I liked it. I really enjoyed it a lot. And I think, you know, in terms of directors who I'm very excited to see where they go from, you know, from this point, I definitely feel like, you know, and I'm totally blanking because you just said her name.
Natasha Kermani.
Natasha. I had the Kermani in my head, but I didn't have Natasha, and I didn't want to just call her Kermani. But I think Natasha's got, you know, a lot of talent, and I'm really excited to see what she can do with that, especially if she can get a bigger budget. Not that you need a good budget, big budget, to tell a good story, because she proves that here. But boy, if she could go out there with resources being I'm totally blanking.
Money being no object?
Yes, object. Yes. I almost said option. Jesus Christ.
Resources being no option, which is indie filmmaking. Resources are not an option.
Exactly. Which is the opposite of what I'm trying to say. But, you know, give that gal like $2 million and go out and let her make her movie. Yeah. And I'm just so excited to see where she goes. But it is. It's a really great movie. Because that was like one of the epic movies this year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so a weird. It's a weird year of sort of doppelganger movies, because we already talked about May the Devil Take You and sort of where it fits in with Satan's Slaves and Terrified. You just were talking about Hellfest, and we also had Bloodfest this year, which is a different spin on that same idea, but very entertaining. And there's
I skipped Bloodfest.
it's way more fun than I expected. I did not have the highest of hopes, and I was pretty entertained by it. And then there's another movie that I think works as sort of a doppelganger or a mirror of Imitation Girl, and you don't have to choose between the two. I much prefer Imitation Girl, and I got a little bit bummed out near the end of the year because this other movie started sucking up all the oxygen and nobody was talking about Imitation Girl, and I was like, but they're both sort of about doppelgangers and sex workers, and like, we're not going to talk. Okay, that's
fine.
Oh,
with Cam.
Yeah. Again, a lot of people liked Cam. More power to them. Cam is impressively made, and that performance is really good. You know, Cam didn't quite do it for me. But I just think it's interesting that we have
that movie until the last 10 minutes.
Well, because it's just like a shrug. But it's just interesting to me that we have these movies that are sort of these weird double versions of each other.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the Wrigley's Doubleman commercial. It's like all over, but just in horror, because it's weird. We don't get a lot of that, like, in comedy or dramas. There's not, you know, you don't have the two, you know, it just seems like horror that kind of happens a lot. When you talk about Cam, Madeline Brewer gives one of the best performances of the year.
Yeah, she's really good.
Genre performances. But boy, that last 10 minutes, and it's hard to talk about because I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't watched it. There was a different way out of that story, and I think they took the easy route out, which was to sort of not really commit to everything that preceded it.
Right.
And that bummed me out. But yeah, she's so good in that movie. So, so good.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So do I go to my next one?
Yeah, you're number six.
All right. So again, it's funny because it's like a lot of mine are sort of like movies. I was like, oh yeah, this is so going to be my movie for this year. And then there was a lot of surprises. And this very much was another big surprise for me. And that is Overlord.
I missed Overlord. There's like five movies that I needed to still see, and Overlord is one of them.
Look, I'm still getting shit from Brian that we didn't see this in theaters, because it very much was a big screen experience. The sound design on that movie is insane. It was actually so much that when I saw it at the first screening of it, it was so loud and bold, like, that it actually blew the speakers in our theater, and they had to reset everything. And for like a good 30 seconds, because, you know, like, when you're in like a war movie and bullets are spraying around, and then suddenly like a character loses like their hearing, and you kind of just have like that nothingness, and you're like, is this stylistic? Is this, you know, is this supposed to be happening? And then you realize, like, oh no, this is actually, the speakers are blown. And they had to basically reset the movie for us. But I wasn't expecting anything out of it, to be very honest. You know, it's just named Overlord. And the marketing played it way too coy with the type of movie it was for so long that I feel like it's definitely a movie, like, because I know it comes out in February, like on Blu-ray and stuff, that a lot of people are going to be like, holy shit, I should have seen this in theaters. Because it really is a lot of fun. Like, for me, I have very specific tastes, and they don't always line up to a lot of critics. But I'm somebody who I very much, and people will call bullshit on this because they're like, people like that don't exist, but it's true. I love watching video games getting played. One of my favorite things is watching Brian play through both Wolfenstein games. And this very much, if this movie had been named Wolfenstein, it would have made $150 million. And I'm almost kind of surprised, like, why didn't you guys just do that? Yeah. Because it definitely shares a lot of DNA with the world of Wolfenstein, the games. And it would have been such a natural marriage with a brand that people would have known, with a lot of talent that people didn't really know. And it would have been a really good introduction. And then also, you know, the stupid people who are like, oh, it's got to be, you know, related to Cloverfield again, because heaven forbid Bad Robot does anything that doesn't involve Cloverfield. And I just, you know, and it doesn't. It has zero to do with Cloverfield. Thank God. And I just love the fact that, you know, this is Bad Robot's first R-rated movie, and it earns it. Like, it is a hard R. There is some really graphic stuff in it, really great creatures, very good monsters, really excellent performances. You know, and again, it's one of those movies where you're like, oh, it's a bunch of dudes trying to fight, you know, Nazi zombies and all this. But, like, there's a character named Chloe who's played by Matilda Olivier, because she's French, and so I'm totally butchered that. But what I love about her character in this sort of very male-dominated story, she really stands out, and it's not in, like, a weird way. It's just natural, like, that she kicks as much ass, and she fights. And she's always been fighting because she lives in Nazi-occupied France. And there's a really good strength to her character, which I really appreciated. And also, you know, having, you know, Wyatt Russell in it didn't hurt a whole lot. Because I was like, at first I was like, oh, okay, you know, Kurt Russell's kid's, you know, out there doing his thing. And I know he's done other movies, but boy, oh boy, like, his star is super bright in this movie. And I'm like, this guy is going to go places, you know? It's just a really good ensemble piece, really fun. I'm totally blanking on the gentleman who plays the sort of Pilou Asbeck. He plays sort of like the Nazi leader that they deal with the most in this. He's so good at being such a dickhead. You just want to fight this guy. Like, you just see, you're like, oh, this guy. Oh boy, the world is ending. Here we go. The joys of living in the Los Angeles area. There's always something. But yeah, it's super duper fun. It's pretty much out of theaters at this point, which is you know, was a bummer for us. But I know the minute we get it in February, because we're gonna buy it. I know Brian's gonna look at me and be like, God damn it, why did I miss this in theaters? And I feel like a lot of people are gonna feel like that too. But it's great. It's a lot of fun. If you didn't make time for it, you know, in theaters, which I get, November, that's fine. Do yourself a favor and see this movie. It's a lot of fun. It just, you know, it hit all of it had all of my buttons, and a lot of good Resident Evil nods too.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm into it. My number six is a movie that I know is going to be higher up on your list, so I won't spend a ton of time talking about it. But that is Halloween.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's. I need to see it again. I've only seen it once, and I know you saw it a couple of times. I know it's out on at least VOD, if not Blu-ray right now. And
oh, yeah. It made Blu-ray and everything last week.
Okay.
So, yeah,
so I haven't picked it up yet. I haven't rewatched it yet. I know I will. You know, it's a movie that I know I will revisit. And the highs are really, really high. The further away I've gotten from it, the more that certain things, unfortunately, have kind of stood out to me as like, oh, I'm not into that, and I'm not into that. But overall, obviously, I really like the movie. It's my number six. There's a lot of really, really good stuff in it. And again, just the fact that, like, hey, they made this good Halloween movie 40 years later. And Jamie Lee Curtis is, like, giving one of the best performances of the year. And it does some really interesting stuff. It does some stuff that I'm not into as well. But for all of the good it does, and it does a lot of good, it definitely deserves a spot on this list.
Is it better than Resurrection, though?
I'm not, you know, listen, I don't want to say that just yet.
you at least need one more viewing of it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Gotcha. I get it. It's all right.
So what is your five? We're down to the top five now.
Yeah. Well, my five is one that you've already mentioned, which is The Stranger's Parade Night. So okay. I won't talk too much about it. But, you know, I freaking loved it. It's awesome. And I'm just excited that I get to have two very distinctly different movies to sort of indulge different cinematic itches with. So yeah. Viva Pray at Night.
My five is a movie you already talked about, and it's A Quiet Place. So look at that. We're already into our top four.
Wow. Look at that. We're so efficient.
Yeah, we are.
All right. So I guess I go into number four now, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So my number four, boy, my top four was really tough because any of these movies technically could have been my number one. So it was just kind of like, okay, it was a really tough choice. And I almost feel like it's sort of, I mean, they're all sort of number one in my heart. but I went with Mandy.
Okay. Yeah.
And I mean, I've been talking about Mandy for like a year now. So it's like, I'm like, oh, more Mandy. And everybody sort of talked about Mandy this year, so I don't even want to talk about it that much, but, it's awesome. I think Andrea Riseborough is like sort of the secret weapon of that entire movie. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to kind of lose their shit over Nicolas Cage. And I think she's actually the best part of that movie. Don't get me wrong. The freakout scene in the bathroom is awesome. And it's, you know, again, you know, everybody sort of laughs at certain things about that movie. And for me, it's actually one of the most horrifying moments.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it sort of bothered me because I saw Mandy again with a crowd. And the first time I saw it at Sundance, it seemed like everybody was sort of on the wavelength of what that movie was trying to achieve. And then the second time I saw it, I kind of pissed off because everybody started laughing at the scene at the end with Nicolas Cage covered in blood with sort of that grin on his face, because they totally missed the emotional weight of that moment.
Yeah, that's so sad.
And I wanted to stand it. Yeah. And I was just like, this isn't something you laugh at. Like, right. What the hell is wrong with you people? And you know, so it's, I've had a chance at, gosh, like maybe 3 or 4 times now. So it's one, again, it's one of those movies, like, if you would have told me in January, like, okay, pick, or, you know, that this is going to be on your, I knew come Sunday, like when I saw it at Sundance, I knew it was going to be on my top list and I knew it was going to be very high at the top. But again, when I came down to like sort of my final four, like it could have been my number one, yeah. You know, and I don't even, and honestly, I don't even need the Cheddar Goblin to make it one of my favorite movies of the year. Everybody wants to talk about the Cheddar Goblin, and that's fine. It's fun. It's cool. But like, that movie is so much bigger and better than the Cheddar Goblin, if we're being completely honest. Like, there's so much really interesting things to kind of pull back and sort of this story, this untold story of Mandy herself. I almost wish we'd had more of that, because there's definitely a story to the way that she carries herself, her scar, her interests, the things that she sort of connects to on almost like an emotional and almost cellular level in that movie. And I wish we'd had more. But I do think Nicolas Cage is fantastic in it. You know, and he, you know, when we always talk about like, you know, doing the Cage Rage, like, yeah, I get it. It's cool and everything. You know, but I think honestly, between that and Mom and Dad, I think he did some really solid work last year. And I don't need him to rage for me to be able to appreciate, you know, who he is as an actor. And also there's going to be this movie Between Worlds that comes out next year or this year.
I think it's out on VOD already.
Is it really?
I think so. I haven't seen it yet, but I think it's out there.
I feel like I would have known about that doing the VOD recaps.
All right.
But I think it's coming soon. No, you might be right. You might be right. But I feel like I would have known. But that movie is quite a trip.
Yeah, and you can rent it right now.
For $6.99
on Amazon. Yeah.
Oh, that must have snuck out there. Yeah. Oh, gosh, it did. It came out in November. I'm an idiot. Sorry, everybody. But that's sort of another weird little trip movie. If you're looking for sort of that Nicolas Cage, but you've already seen Mandy, Between Worlds might do it for you. It's pretty messed up. So, and if you've ever wanted to watch Nicolas Cage having sex, reading a book by Nicolas Cage, that's your movie.
Mandy was one of the movies that I didn't put on this list because it was my number 2 on my overall list. And I figured it was going to be on yours, so I knew we were going to talk about it anyway. I've already talked about it on that other show, so I didn't put it on this list. But yeah, I mean, it's for sure one of my favorite movies of the year. And I think more than any other 2018 movie is the movie I'm going to rewatch the most.
You get something different out of it every single time.
Yeah, it just, like, my number one, I can't deny, is my number one, just because I think it's so well made. But I think the one I fell in love with the most is Mandy, for sure.
Gotcha.
My number 4 is a movie that I have been talking up for much of the year. And so it only makes sense that when the DVD was released, that they would quickly turn to top critic Heather Wixon and quote her on the box cover. And that is Jen Wexler's directorial debut, The Ranger. Oh, I literally wrote the review for Daily Dead, and they quoted you for Daily Dead.
I know, and I'm...
It's not your fault. You're a top critic. Your name carries much more weight. If they put my name, it's like, well, that doesn't mean anything. People know your name, so I get it.
Whatever. Oh, please. How many film critic organizations are you part of?
Oh, please. Two? Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. I belong to none because nobody wants me.
Because you're a top critic. So because you're at the top.
Obviously, I'm not. Obviously,
those organizations are below top. Anyway,
I don't think so.
The Ranger is, again, we've talked already a number of times about sort of 80s throwback slashers. And I will say that I appreciate that none of the movies that we're talking about are obnoxiously 80s throwback, you know, where it's like, get it? We're doing the 80s. None of them do. None of them do any of that bullshit. It just, they kind of have a vibe that like, oh, this reminds me of the movies that I grew up loving. And, yeah, The Ranger is just about a bunch of pretty awful punk kids who escape into the woods to hide after they get in an altercation with a cop, and they're met with a psychotic park ranger. who begins to try to kill them, and in some cases is successful. And the actor who plays the park ranger, whose name I can't remember, he's really, really fun. Chloe Levine as the lead is like so good and redeems all of the other, you know, kind of awful characters who are not always awful. There's a couple that are sometimes you really like them and then sometimes they're awful. So it kind of brings you back and forth. I know that not everybody's going to have patience for the ranger because it takes it's a short movie. It's like under 80 minutes. And I would say more than half of it is just setting stuff up. Like, I don't think the ranger really springs into action until after the 45 or 50 minute mark. But once it gets going, it really gets going, and it goes to some crazy places at the end that I think are really interesting in terms of what they have to say about the dynamic between the slasher and the final girl, in the same way that not that it's not saying the same things, but I thought that was a really interesting thing that they did in Halloween in terms of talking about the relationship between killer and final girl. I think the ranger does some of that in a very different way. But I just thought the movie was a lot of fun. It's a movie that I know I'm going to just put on a lot, you know, just to have on in the background. It's like a good party movie. I was very entertained by it.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. And I do still feel really horrible that I was the one put it, because I think it was just me telling people at Fantasia, like, you need to go see this movie and here's, you know, this is why. And then they quoted me. And I feel really awful about that I kind of just sort of quote blocked you.
Your
there.
Quote was alliterative and much more clever than anything I can ever come up with. So,
well, that's just my stupid marketing brain. I'm such a quote whore. but yeah, it's got some rough edges to me, but
it's almost all rough edges.
But that's the thing. Like, there's a charm to that. And I think,
yes.
You know, I like that Jen Wexler, you know, for her directorial debut, comes out with this film that has something to say, which you wouldn't really expect it to. Because, you know, most slasher movies don't really have a ton to say. Or at least ones from the 80s didn't have a ton to say.
No.
And I like the fact that she leans into sort of that classic feeling, but yet still has, you know, something to do with this, you know, character. And I'm trying to be vague because I know not a ton of people have seen it, so I want people to sort of discover...
Yeah.
Aspects of the story for themselves, but it really takes some interesting turns that I wasn't expecting. And of course, you know, the way it leans into color is great. And Chloe Levine is absolutely fantastic in it. And I also, you know, as I always do, you know, if you really like her in The Ranger, go see The Transfiguration, which I think is still on Netflix Instant. She's really, really fantastic in that movie as well. So
yeah, I still need to
yeah,
see that.
I figured we'd see that on your list.
For a little while, it was only available at Redbox. It's still available at Redbox. You can now buy the DVD or the Blu-ray, and I know at some point soon it's going to show up on Shudder. Yet another reason to subscribe to Shudder if you haven't already. But be on the lookout for it. I really liked it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your number three.
My number three is Halloween.
Okay.
Yeah. Again, it was one of those toss-ups where I was like, it could go any way on this. I really like Halloween. I think I've done five times with it now because I'm weird. This has been a weird year where I've actually gotten to see movies multiple times, and that doesn't always happen, which can always make sort of these kind of lists tough for me because I'm like, oh, what did I see that really landed when I've only gotten a chance to see it once? But it was interesting because I've gotten to see it with a few different crowds. So I've gotten different experiences out of it. Like I saw it, like they did an original press screening for it, but there was also like contest winners that got to go see it. And they, like, those people lost their minds. And then I saw it at Fantastic Fest, which has a different vibe. And then we went and saw it, Thursday night, you know, when it opened with, like, you know, the normies or whatever, which people had their kids there. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, that's kind of cool. And I was really worried about the kids behind us talking the whole time. But it was actually their parents talking more than they did. And I was like, really? Shut up. You're setting a bad example for your children. But for me, it is a movie that I very much have enjoyed again and again. As somebody who watches the Halloween movies a lot, I love that, you know, it doesn't – nothing about its approach in terms of sort of dismissing everything that came after, you know – the first Halloween, it doesn't really bother me because, you know, as we know, those movies are there and we get to enjoy them still.
Right.
And I can go and indulge in my Cult of Thorn, Creepy Paul Rudd stuff if I want to. But for me, the biggest triumph of this movie, obviously, is the treatment of Laurie Strode. And what's really interesting to me is that the movie that they said was coming to us isn't really the movie that we get, because the whole movie's like marketing was around this, you know, he's waited for me, I've waited for him, which is really interesting because Michael hasn't been waiting for Laurie Strode. Michael really doesn't care about Laurie Strode. And it's really interesting if you watch the scene when they're outside of when Vicky is babysitting and she sees Michael upstairs and then she shoots him in sort of like the alleyway afterwards. And he, you know, the bullet hits him in the arm and he kind of pauses for a moment, but he doesn't go back to Laurie. He just keeps going. And for me, that ends up being the most intriguing part of the movie, because it really sort of mirrors what I think a lot of women who go through trauma feel like, where you want that closure, but that doesn't mean that the person who's caused you harm is going to give it to you.
Right.
And you don't always get the closure that you're looking for. And I think for me, that was sort of the most powerful thing about this Halloween, is that, you know, Laurie has spent 40 years of her life waiting for this, and Michael's just been waiting to get out and kill. It's not about him getting to Laurie. And I know people have issues with the Dr. Sarge Train stuff. I think once you know it's coming, I think it plays a lot better. I think it's really fun, to be very honest. I was a little off-put the first time I saw it. And then the second time I was like, okay, that's a little better. And then I just watched the Blu-ray like 2 weeks ago and I was like, okay, this is hella fun. Because it's something we'd never really seen before. We know we have the Dr. Wynn stuff, but it's different because this isn't Dr. Wynn trying to, you know, sort of do some sort of weird cult shit. It's just a doctor who wants to go see Michael Myers, like basically out in the wild and figuring out what it is that drives him, because he has spent, you know, decades after, you know, Loomis trying to figure out what makes this guy tick. And he can talk, but he doesn't. And I'm really glad that Michael doesn't talk in this movie, because holy shit, I don't need that. I don't ever need to hear Michael talk. So please, I know they flirted with it in this movie. Don't ever make Michael talk. Because I think that would kind of diminish the mystery of this character, because we've gone back to the mystery. We're not over-explaining the character anymore. We're not over-explaining the motivations. And I think, you know, and again, you know, everyone's like, oh, but Judy Greer kind of gets like sidelined. And I think she does to a degree, but there's also some very subtle things that happen with her character. Like, if you look at this at the moment when the cops show up at her house and she realizes, holy shit, my mom's been right this entire time, she's wearing a Christmas sweater. And it sort of harkens back to that joke that Vicky makes at the beginning of the movie where she's like, you guys should just skip Halloween and go straight to Christmas. Yeah. And it's such a very, like, again, a very subtle touch, that they don't make a big deal out of it. It's not this big thing like, oh, look at that, she's wearing a Christmas sweater, blah, 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 you know. But again, it just shows how this trauma has sort of weighed on her in a very quiet way, because she's had to overcome it in a very different manner than Laurie has. Like, Laurie has just been all about this, where, you know, her character has been sort of compartmentalizing it because she wants to believe in the good in the world. And the gotcha moment in that movie is, again, when you talk about sort of those moments that are truly satisfying out of horror in 2018, that gotcha moment, so freaking good.
It's great.
And I really like Andy Matichek in it too. You know, I know that some people are like, oh, the boyfriend stuff is kind of dumb, whatever. I get it. But like at the same time, it didn't bother me at all. I love, you know, the set piece with, you know, in the backyard with, oh my gosh, I'm totally blanking because it's the same characters from Halloween 2. The next door neighbors, and I'm totally, I can't even believe, oh God. Oh, the Elrods, that's what it is. When he's in the Mr. Elrod's backyard and he thinks it's Mr. Elrod, but it's really Michael, and you have sort of the motion sensor lights flashing on and off. And it's really good because it's like those moments where you're nervously laughing because you know shit's about to go down, but the character doesn't.
Right.
And that score, you know, from John Carpenter and Cody, and I'm totally blanking on the other gentleman's name who scored along with him because, you know, I want to make sure everybody gets credit for that. It is amazing. Like it's been a really good year for horror scores. And when you talk about ones that you kind of go back to a lot, like Mandy's another one that really nails it. I think, you know, Halloween is another great one. Two other movies that are coming up were probably some of my favorite scores/soundtracks of the year. It was just a really, really well-made movie. And you can tell that the right people were involved with this. And they were making the movie for the right reasons. And that's why I love it. And I know there's some people like, it just didn't do it for me. And that's fine. But I feel like in 5 years, a lot of people are going to be like, oh, maybe I was kind of a little tougher on this movie than I should have been. You know, and maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, I do think it's, again, it's a movie I've spent quite a bit of time with, obviously, because I keep yammering about it. But it just, it really is somebody who loves this franchise and loves these characters. It was everything I possibly could have wanted, but I didn't know that I needed in my life.
Yeah. Right on.
So there you go.
My three is, I guess I'm surprised at where it showed up because I didn't know what to expect because I've seen some of this filmmaker's other movies and sometimes he runs a little hot and cold for me, and that's Anthony DeBlasi and his latest movie, Extremity. Have you had a chance to see it yet?
I have not.
Okay. It's like Halloween. It's another really interesting look at sort of trauma and the effects of trauma on a woman. And again, it helps that it was released right around the same time, and I saw it right around the same time as that documentary Haunters, which looks at specifically Nakamie Manor and just what a horrible place that is. And so I watched Haunters, and then I watched Extremity, and Extremity is very much about, you know, this woman who's going through this extreme haunt, but it says like, oh, what if you took someone who... What if you're trying to push someone, you know, you're trying to push them to pass their limits, but you don't really know who it is that you're fucking with, and you don't really know the sort of ticking time bomb that you are doing all this horrible stuff to. And there's something very satisfying about that. And I think, you know, the movie says some interesting things too about trauma and how we deal with that. And it's just really, you know, it's a movie without much of a sense of humor, which is, I won't say rare for me, because it's not like every movie on this list is a horror comedy, but I don't always go for horror movies that are quite as grim as this one. And it is very grim, but it's just, it's really well made. It's well acted. It really commits to the bit. It goes to some crazy places and is very, very satisfying. So I dug it.
Interesting. Yeah, I because I know that just came out within like the last couple of months, and I just haven't had a chance to catch up with
it. It's impossible to keep up with everything.
Oh my god! It's like, I know I joke about this, but it's like I really miss the days when like we got a few quiet months for horror, so that those were my catch up times, and I just don't have that anymore. So it makes me bummed out because there is, you know, for as many movies, I mean, as I've seen, I still feel like there's at least 50 that I didn't.
Right.
And I'm like, oh my God, how the hell do I do this? And that's not even talking about like horror TV. Like, and that's like a whole nother beast. Like I've had to just kind of give up on like keeping up with most shows because I'm like, I can't, I just can't. So I feel like it's weird to like, for as much as I get to see and get to experience, like I still feel like I'm missing out at least on like a quarter of all the stuff that I should be seeing. So
yeah.
So I'm glad you're mentioning things that I'm not, because, you know, I'm sort of talking about all the basic stuff.
One of our top two will be the same and the other will be different. So I'm curious to where one of these lands for you. We might have them in the exact same spot.
Okay. Well, my number two, and again, it was just like, oh, it's like, you know, a Sophie's Choice situation where I was like, oh, God. So my number two is Anna and the Apocalypse.
That is my number two as well.
Woohoo! Number two. Okay. And again, it's a movie that, and any other given year probably would have been my number one. But I'm so glad that you got to catch up with it, because I feel like this is truly a very special movie. And I've been waiting, because I saw it at Fantastic Fest 2017. So I'd been waiting for like over a year for this movie to get out here and get in theaters. And I know even the theatrical release was still really wonky. But some people were able to see it. I believe it's actually coming to digital in February. So, you know, hopefully people will finally get to kind of catch up with it who missed it in theaters. But it is so goddamn good. It is so goddamn heartwarming. I love everything about it. I pretty much know the entire soundtrack beat for beat now. to the point where even Brian's like, how do I know all the words to all of these songs already? And he's only seen the movie once. So it's just, it's so, for me, when you're a director and you're going to put yourself out there, I want you to swing for the fences. I want you to go for it. Nothing disappoints me more as a fan is when directors play it safe. And this movie was made for nothing. Out of Scotland, you know, basically they had to go out there and not only make a zombie movie that has, you know, there's some pretty crazy gore in this movie, but it doesn't need it, but it still has it. You have tons of creatures. You've also got a cast that has to sing and dance through a lot of these sequences, which is a pain in the ass. And the thing is, it's like they could have like pulled back on any of those elements, and they never do. And right from the beginning, like it just, it sets a tone, and it really, like, you know, I joke because I had a chance to interview John McPhail on Corpse Club, you know, when the movie was coming out. And of course I found out that he hates High School Musical. But for me, it did remind me of High School Musical in the way that that movie, the first one, because it was Kenny Ortega, who, you know, is sort of this musical movie god, who's done some really great stuff over the years. And for me, because the first High School Musical was kind of a surprise for Disney, like they were just sort of trying to do something, you know, musically inclined for kids, and you know, a very unknown cast behind it. And this, you know, they really, again, sort of swung for the fences. And that's why it reminded me of that, not really in its intent and tone, because obviously this earns its R rating. But just to create characters that we really care about and we really invest in, but they're not cookie cutter. And I think also in a time when like the world is just kind of shit these days, you know what I mean? Like I hate going on Twitter because there's just always something awful that I'm going to discover about terrible things that are going on in this world. And I think for me, something like watching Anna and the Apocalypse and seeing this character of Anna, who's already kind of had a rough go of it. And then the world goes to hell quite literally. And yet there's this really great moment when she's talking to her best friend, I'm totally blank. It's Malcolm Cumming who plays him. Oh, it's John. And he's pushing her in like a shopping cart. And he said something, he's like, well, cause her goal is to go to Australia. This young girl wants to break out. She wants to go to Australia and see the world. And so he makes this comment to her and he's like, oh, well, I guess, you know, Australia is out of the picture now. And she was like, why? And for me, it's such a beautiful, quiet moment because amidst all of this bullshit, all of this horribleness, death all around her, the uncertainty of what's going to happen, and she still has dreams, and she still has things that she's aspiring to do. And I don't think we ever see that in these types of movies. You know, it's like when, like if you look at something like Shaun of the Dead, like it isn't about where these characters are going to go from here. It's about how are they going to, you know, survive this particular experience. And then we get sort of where the world goes from there. And I think for me, that was just so wonderful. And it just made me feel better that, like, you know what, regardless of how terrible things are, it's okay to still have hope. Because what, you know, I mean, it's not a baby in a quiet place, but, you know, it's just nice to have something that you can still look forward to, even if everything around you is falling apart. And the songs are so good. And there's so much great energy. And I really cared about all of those characters. Like, I think I cried like twice during that movie. And I never expected that. Cause I'm not like a super sappy person, or maybe I don't think I am. And maybe I really am, but there's certain moments in that movie that really got to me on an emotional level where I wasn't expecting it. So I'm so excited for fans, you know, once it kind of gets really out there for the home release to get to discover it. Cause it is something very special. And I'm so glad you got to see it.
Yeah, me too, especially before making this list, because it certainly deserves its spot on the list. I will, you know, Shaun of the Dead obviously was in my head a lot throughout the movie because I think tonally they have a lot of things in common in the way that they kind of shift back and forth between comedy, but then playing a lot of the horror really straight, especially some of the more, you know, horrifying moments they play really straight. But yeah, it could have gone so wrong in so many ways. And I would hear it described, well, it's this, you know, Christmas zombie musical. And I'm like, well, I love the sound of that. But boy, that may be more than any one filmmaker can pull off. But they really do pull it off. The horror stuff, I will admit, again, as somebody who's seen a lot of zombie movies and especially Shaun of the Dead, like, I don't think there's much that's surprising about any of the horror beats, but it kind of doesn't matter. You know, like, I'm fine with it being a little bit formulaic because, as you said, A, I care about the characters. B, the songs are terrific. And I was watching and I was thinking back to Stage Fright from a couple of years ago, and you and I were like some of the only people who really liked Stage Fright. And it was like, it's this horror musical. How come there's not more of these? And there's a lot to like in Stage Fright, but like, this is the really, really good version of Stage Fright, where like all the songs are great. It's told just very confidently. The performance from Ella Hunt is really, really great. I mean, everybody's great in the cast, but Ella Hunt in particular, it's like, well, this person should be a movie star. Yeah, I mean, it had me right from the opening kind of dance number in the cafeteria. I was like, oh, I'm so on board for this movie, and it's going to really have to fuck up to lose me. And it never does. It just, it stays really strong and really sweet throughout the whole thing. It's, of all the movies on my list, or even really of all the horror movies I saw this year, it's the one with the most heart, and it's the one that's the easiest to sort of fall in love with. And yeah, I think you're right. As more and more people see this movie, I think that there's going to be like a massive cult around this movie, and we're going to see girls at horror conventions carrying around giant candy canes. You know, we're going to see a lot of like Anna and the Apocalypse cosplay. Like, I'm not going to say Rocky Horror levels of cultdom, but I do think that there is the sort of this crossover for like musical fans and horror fans, and people who are sort of into both. Are just going to lose their shit for this movie. It's really, really fun and, like you said, special.
Yeah, and it also, like, with, you know, because you mentioned, obviously, the Shaun of the Dead influence. And it really, it's a love letter to a lot of different movies because, like, you know, there's the sequence when they're dancing in the graveyard, and that's obviously him tipping his hat to Night of the Living Dead. Mm-hmm. There's also, if you for those of you with keen eyes, there's also a little nod to Demolition Man. In Anna's bedroom, there's seashells right above her bed.
Oh, interesting.
Which I didn't know until John and I talked about it, but he was like, that was my little nod to Demolition Man. And so that's why I'm really excited to kind of go back and watch it, because there are sort of those really, I don't want to say obvious, but there's like sort of those natural homages that you're expecting, which we get, but there's a lot more that, you know, I know that are in there that I haven't had a chance to sort of look at yet.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to kind of see, you know, to get to enjoy it again. And I mean, you know, I watch a lot of like sort of the same movies at Christmas, and I know this one, like, come December 2019, it's going to be really tough to get me to not watch Anna during December, because that's probably mostly what I'm going to be watching. But it really, it's lovely. And it's just, it's nice to have a horror movie that like satisfies me, but like I can go and be like to my niece who's 13, be like, you know what? I think you'd really dig this.
Yeah.
And there, you know what I mean? Like, it's a movie that kind of hits a lot of different beats for different demographics, in ways that it doesn't ever feel like it's talking down to audience members. And again, that's a really tough thing to sort of nail, but it really does. It reminds me a lot of like Happy Death Day almost in that way, where it's a movie that like teens can enjoy and they're going to love, but as grownups, like, aren't going to feel dumb for liking it too, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Now this is very interesting because we're at our number ones, and it would appear, I think I know what your one is by process of elimination and knowing the movie that you really loved this year. It would appear that neither of us have each other's ones on our lists at all.
Weird.
I'm fascinated by that.
Oh, boy. I know. Now I'm kind of like, I don't know what your number one is. Huh.
Yeah, it's not especially interesting, but go ahead with yours.
Oh, I mean, well, mine is like, I mean, you know. If you've been paying attention to me at all for the last few months, I mean, obviously it's Suspiria, which, you know, if you would have told me 3 years ago when it was, you know, first being sort of bantered about that Suspiria was being remade, that it would not only be a movie that I enjoyed immensely, but that it would be one of my favorites of the year, I'd been like, really? Are you sure? And it is. It's a movie I've seen three times in theaters, and I've watched it once at home because I had to do an interview with the Marc Coulier who did the effects, which was definitely way more satisfying than the last time I saw it at AMC theaters, where it was so dark that you could not see anything in the finale. And I was so bummed out because that was Brian's first experience with it, and you couldn't even see what was going on in the climax, which obviously you really should be seeing what's going on in there. There's a moment where he was like, wait, I didn't even know that was there. And I was like, yeah, you couldn't see it because they had such shitty projection. So that was a super duper bummer. But then I got a screener and it looked so much better at home. That neither here nor there. Again, it's one of those movies I feel like I've talked about a shit ton this year. Literally like a shit ton. It's tough for me to even say why I love it so much. Because every time I watch it, it's something different that kind of sort of curls my toes a little bit. But it's one of those, like, if people haven't seen it, I'm really reluctant to dive into the things that really make me enjoy it because it's so damn spoilery. But I love the fact that you come into this movie and you think you know the type of character that Dakota Johnson is playing. And it's not. It is not what you're thinking whatsoever. I love Tilda Swinton in this, and I know people have a lot of problems with her playing Dr. Kemper. Does not bother me in the least bit, because of sort of the thematic elements that are sort of at play in the film. It makes sense. And again, it's really hard to describe, you know, discuss that without really digging into things that if anybody hasn't seen this Suspiria, I don't want to ruin that for them. But she's, you know, she plays three different characters in the film. All very different, you know, and it's just a testament to who Tilda is as an actress, that she's able to sort of dive into these very different sort of aspects of these characters. And it's all just really incredibly engaging, like in very different ways. And again, it's so hard to talk about it and feel like a jerk because I'm not really saying much of interest, but I will say that it is my favorite thing that we've seen from Mia Goth. She's only been in a handful of movies, and I really liked her in A Cure for Wellness, but I love her as Sarah in this movie. She is an absolute delight. She's the kind of character you sort of just want to hang out with forever. And there's some really fantastic moments of body horror in that movie. I like the way that they dive into the witches. They're not playing coy about it this time. It's not a discovery. You know, you're not discovering the witches. We know going into this, it's about witches, which is still one of my favorite things. When I finally got Brian to sit down and watch the original Suspiria, he thought it was like a slasher. And then once like it comes about that there are witches, he's like, wait, this is a movie about witches? And I was like, oh, hell yeah. So, you know, it doesn't have that kind of thing. It very much is upfront about the movie it is. But it's just, I mean, on a technical level, I love everything about it. That score, the last song, and I'm totally blanking on the name, but it plays over the credits. And I think I've audibly sobbed twice during it because there's just so much that you carry with it. And again, maybe it's sort of a difference of experience, you know, being a woman versus maybe how you viewed the movie. Cause I know you weren't as crazy about it. But for me, like, there's a weight that hits once you sort of get to that epilogue, and you realize what the game has been all along, and the things that Luca was really exploring. It's kind of devastating in a way that I wasn't expecting. So I love it. It's the only movie I would call a quote unquote new movie that's actually made my poster wall ever. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, I moved out of the 90s for so long. It's always like the quote unquote newest movie that had made my poster wall was Scream, and Suspiria made it this year. So, yeah, again, I know it's a movie that, you know, I know we didn't need a Suspiria remake. I get that. But I like that in this one, it's not just trying to rehash the territory that Dario was going, you know, was exploring with his. It's a very different movie. You could have named this anything, and I would have loved it just as much, because, it, you know, I know it's the connection of Suspiria, but it's like between the title, the character of Susie, and the fact that there's witches, there's really not a whole lot of shared DNA between the two films. And I also am kind of pissed because I know it came out where Dario was like, oh, you know, this movie basically crapped all over the legacy of mine. And what's really weird is I remember when we saw it at Fantastic Fest, Luca said he screened it with Dario, and Dario clapped afterwards and hugged him and said thank you. So is Dario just like making, you know, just, I don't understand that. But I do know that like Luca went on the record and basically said, no, Dario, you know, said this was incredible. I made sure to screen it with him first and foremost before anybody else saw it, because I knew I had to get his blessing or I wouldn't have, you know, I wouldn't have felt good about putting this movie out there, and he gave it to me. So what the hell, Dario, is what I ask. You know, go make another Dracula movie is what I'm saying.
No, they are completely different movies, and the idea that it craps on the legacy of the original is nonsense, because like you said, it's like title, ballet school, character named Susie. It's not even, she's not even playing the same character.
Ballet school. Well, no, but it's not even a ballet school. It's just a dance school.
Well, okay, dance school.
Because there's no ballet.
Dance school, I should have said. Sorry. Yeah. Even
how dare
the
you?
The fact that she's named Susie, but she's not playing the same character, you know? So it's like there are so few similarities between the two movies. And that's the thing that I admire most. Because like you said, yeah, we hear Suspiria remake and it's like, oh, gosh, why? You know, with all the other movies you can make, can you just go make something else? And they did. They made something completely different that just happens to be called Suspiria. So I give them all the credit in the world for just making something that's completely unique and totally set apart from the original Suspiria. You can love both equally, and they almost have nothing in common with one another, you know?
Yeah. But I'm, and of course everyone's using that Dario Argento crap to, like, you know, get clicks and shit, but I just think that's a bunch of bunk.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah.
My number one, again, not a surprise because it was also my number one overall for the year. It was my favorite movie, you know, of all the movies released last year, as well as my favorite horror movie, and that is Hereditary, which...
Holy shit, I didn't even put Hereditary on my list.
I know.
Oh, my God.
So that was just oversight, not so much that you didn't like it as much as these other movies.
No, I loved... You know what, though? It's probably not going to be a movie I'm going to watch a ton, though.
No, me either. I'll watch Anna and the Apocalypse and Mandy way more than I'll ever watch Hereditary, because it is a rough experience. But
oh my God,
there's just no denying how good it is. Yeah. Let's go back to the... Okay, my number 10 is Victor Crowley.
Oh my God, I can't even believe I forgot Hereditary. It's oh my God, I feel like an idiot now. It's so tough when, like, you see something in January
of course.
Any given year, and it, like... By the end of the year, it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, I can't even believe it. So I'm really glad you mentioned it, because I'm a total idiot. But yes, go for it.
No, I've already talked about it. I mean, I just think it's like, again, another first-time filmmaker, and it just comes out of the gate like, look at this thing that I made. This is going to last forever. I just think it's a pretty incredible horror film. I know that not everybody loves it. It was very polarizing. I know people, even people who liked it, don't necessarily like where it lands, and I understand that. I have less of an issue with it. I think it's pretty remarkable all the way through, and I went into it knowing basically nothing. I saw one trailer once. That was the extent of my knowledge in terms of even what it was about, and the trailer was unsettling, and I knew it was very hyped, but I didn't know anything, and so that there are certain major events that happen in that movie that took me completely by surprise, because I did not know at all that that's what was going to happen. Again, you know, we have had a year where there have been a handful of genre performances that stand, if not equal to, then well above, I think, a lot of what we're getting in other types of movies. And, you know, in a better world, Toni Collette would be winning Best Actress for her performance in this movie, because it's just next level great. I just think everything about this movie is pretty incredible. I am not anxious to rewatch it a bunch of times, but it is something else.
Yeah, I admittedly, and I think this is something we talked about, like, maybe on a Corpse Club or whatever. It's a movie that probably won't get played in my house, only because it's really tough for Brian when you have stories about moms passing away, and that immediately will take him out. And honestly, I really was expecting, I could feel him sort of tense up at the beginning of Anna. You know, and that's not a spoiler, because it's not really crucial to the plot that's in the movie, but, you know, she'd lost her mom years ago, and I was like, I could feel him tense. And I was like, oh shit, I'm going to lose him. I'm like, just hang in there. We're getting to a song. It's going to be okay. And as soon as, like, it didn't become this major focus, he was fine.
Yeah.
But because Hereditary is literally revolves around the death of this matriarch, like, it was just hard for him to get in that movie. And honestly, I think that's probably, like, if I do get to rewatch it, it'll be on my own. Because for him, it was very uncomfortable. And it was interesting, like, hearing from him, because for me, I fell in love with it. And I'm okay with characters who aren't, quote unquote, always likable. Or, you know, there's, like, always, like, this sort of conflict. Like, I saw somebody was mentioning, like, you know, these characters don't even feel like they like each other. This is, like, a family that there's no warmth between them. But I think that's the point. I think there's just something to this family where they've just never come together. And maybe it's because of these things that have kind of been, like, over them for so many years. And, you know, there is something about that stark confrontation of the things you should never say to your children, but they sort of get said here. And there's something horrifying in that in a completely different way than the actual horror elements. And I do agree. I mean, I think I said it in January last year, like, Toni Collette should be up for all the awards. And the fact that she is not being somebody who we're discussing, you know, incessantly about them breaks my heart, because I think, you know, if this movie come out labeled as a quote unquote thriller, like maybe Get Out was being labeled, she would definitely be in the conversation more. But I also like the fact that, you know, A24 kind of just stuck to its guns. Like, no, this is a horror movie. And maybe because we all know it and because, you know, we're all appreciative of it, you know, maybe she doesn't need that stupid award. Like, does she deserve it? Yeah. And it's not going to change her performance, but, like, we're still here for you, Toni.
Yeah.
We still love you, and we're still celebrating the shit out of you. And I can't even believe that I forgot Hereditary on my list. Holy crap.
It happens when we're making these lists. I've done it in years past where we've done our lists and then I've been like, oh, I completely forgot to mention, you know, X movie, because it's just, you can't remember every single movie that you saw.
Oh, that was like, I mean, seriously, like when I was doing my favorites list over on Daily Dead, like I probably talked about like 12 or 14 movies in my favorites list. And then I still had like 15 more movies that I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm not putting this on this list. Yeah. Because I was just like, it was a really great year all around, like of films of every level and every sort of, you know, it hit all these different sort of like niches within the genre. That, I mean, anybody who says that 2018 was a bad year for horror, like, I don't know what you're on and I don't know what rock you're living under, but I don't want any part of it because that's ridiculous. There was so much good stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm completely devastated that I left Hereditary off. And also, honestly, if we were talking about how great Toni Collette is in that movie, I think Alex Wolff is just as excellent. And I think he is somebody who, you know, I know sort of Timothy Chalamet is sort of like the new hot young actor in Hollywood, but I want that for Alex Wolff because I think this kid is really, really super talented. He does so much in this movie. There's so much weight that Peter has to carry throughout this entire film. And he's so good also in My Friend Dahmer. And he was really fun in Jumanji. And I think it shows really great range. Like, I feel like I've only seen one Timothy Chalamet movie, but I feel like I've seen every Timothy Chalamet movie. And so Alex Wolff is a kid who really sort of has branched out in different genres and done excellent work in all of them. And so for as great as Toni is, he's just as excellent in it as well.
Yeah. Do you want to just quickly read down your list? Sometimes people like us to recap at the end from 10 to 1.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm Casey Kasem now. Coming in at number 10, it's Timo DeJanto's The Night Comes For Us. No, I'll play it. I'm not going to be able to be that clever for the next 9. So, yes, Night Comes For Us was number 10. What Keeps You Alive was number 9. A Quiet Place coming in at number 8. Hellfest, number 7. Overlord at number 6. Strangers Pray at Night, number 5. Mandy at number 4. Halloween at number 3. Anna and the Apocalypse at number 2. And Suspiria at number 1.
Very nice. I like how different our lists were. My number 10, Strangers Pray at Night. Number 9, May the Devil Take You. Number 8, Sequence Break. Number 7, Imitation Girl. Number 6, Halloween. Number 5, A Quiet Place. Number 4, The Ranger. Number 3, Extremity. Number 2, Anna and the Apocalypse. And number 1, Hereditary.
Woo-woo! We did it!
Yeah, this was super fun. Thank you. I always love talking horror with you, and I know everybody always loves when you come on, so thank you. I'm glad we got to do this.
You're welcome. I also enjoy talking horrors with you as well. So we can do that in the next
That's
episode.
For our other podcast.
Yes. The Horrors BFFs.
Where can everybody find you online?
Oh, nowhere. No, in all seriousness. Yep, so you'll find me over writing over at dailydead.com. I will be in the thick of Sundance over the next week or so, so be sure to check over there for some really hopefully interesting and fun coverage out of Park City. We'll see how it goes. And then you can find me over on Twitter at The Horror Chick.
Yeah, you can. We're at fthismovie.com and on Twitter at fthismovie, and you can always email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you again, Heather. This was really fun, and it reminded me of a couple movies I need to watch and or rewatch. So I appreciate that. I think I'm going to start with The Night Comes for Us, because goddamn that movie.
Right. I mean, I kind of almost want, if I wasn't going to go see a movie tonight, I'm like, you know, maybe I go watch The Night Comes for Us.
Anyway, thank you so much. And, we'll talk to you guys next week.